This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Pleasant good evening, Bahamas. This is Guardian Radio 96.9. This is the Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto and my co-host, Bahamian surgical oncologist Dr. Wesley Francis. Good evening, Dr. Francis. Thank you for being here.
Good evening, Greg. Thanks for the invitation, and good evening, Bahamas.
So this is an interactive show. We encourage you to call in with the questions that have always been burning on your mind, the ones you're afraid to ask. If you need to change your voice, do so. If you need to anonymously text us so we can read out your question and answer it to the best of our ability, please do so. You can text us on the Guardian Radio text line, 422-4796, which is powered by BTC, standard text rate supply, or you can call us at 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 326-4259. Or call toll-free from the Family Islands at 242-300-5720. So the Urologist Speaks, Dr. Francis and myself, based on a completely voluntary basis. We're trying to uplift the community with emphasis particularly on preventative and proactive medicine. We want to shed a light on important health topics for men, women, and children. And basically we want to have Bahamians as a whole live longer and have better quality of life, both physically and mentally. So this is October. We're still in Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We spoke at length with the regional expert, surgical oncologist Dr. Wesley Francis. I'm sure not everybody was able to join us last week. We were all worried about a possible impending hurricane, particularly affecting the Northern Islands, but I think it's important that we highlight the important points that we discussed last week in terms of breast cancer in the Bahamas. What is the landscape? What do we do in terms of screening and treatment options? And then the differences between menopausal, postmenopausal, and premenopausal breast cancer in this country.
So, Greg, we did go over this, and it's October. And you know, in October, we bring awareness to breast cancer. Breast cancer is the number one cancer affecting women within the country. Even though we highlight it in October, it's something that really we should be talking about on a regular basis. Breast cancer, every woman has a risk of developing breast cancer just because they have breasts. And that risk, for an average risk woman, that's somewhere about 11 to 12% for their lifetime. There are some risk factors that increases those risks. And unfortunately, one of those risk factors is if you have the breast cancer gene. It's called the BRCA gene. And that increases your risk from about 75 to 85% over your lifetime. And unfortunately for us in the Bahamas, patients with the BRCA gene or patients who have breast cancer with the BRCA gene, we have the highest number in the world. And there was a study done by our local oncologist which demonstrated that because they were seeing a trend in increasing rates of breast cancer among younger women. And so we have seen that over the years, and that is what led to that research. And then we found that really the reason for that was because of this genetic mutation. And it's unique to us because even in the rest of the Caribbean, they did the same studies and they were not able to identify that. They identified some other genes, but not BRCA. BRCA is somewhat unique to us. And I mean, there's a lot of speculations as to why, but it has to do basically the diversity of the population, a small genetic pool, and some other reasons. But really, that is the reason why we are seeing a lot of younger women with breast cancer. Breast cancer in general is a cancer of older women.
Well, I think it's important to emphasize that men and women can get the breast cancer gene mutation, type 1 and type 2, and that would predispose us or increase the incidence or likelihood of men and women getting breast cancer and other cancers such as pancreatic cancer, under the purview of urology, prostate cancer as well. So also we need to also make aware that men can get breast cancer.
Yeah, men do get breast cancer. Not as often, obviously, but the majority of the men who do get breast cancer also have the BRCA gene. And the concern about when a man gets breast cancer, obviously the breast on a man is very small, and so it's at a higher risk of spreading more quickly. And so especially men who have women in their families or have a significant family history of breast cancer or women who they're known to have the BRCA gene, they are also at risk and they should be, there should be heightened awareness of this and then they should do their surveillance. It's not easy to screen men. We don't have a screening tool for male breast cancer, but it has to be born out of your awareness, knowing that if you are from a BRCA family, you are at higher risk and therefore you can develop it.
And the BRCA gene test is available locally. It's not inexpensive, but if you are in that high-risk group, that may save your life. It may save the life of someone in your family.
Definitely.
So you said something very interesting last week as a surgical oncologist, as we advance in terms of treatment of breast cancer, that surgery really is becoming less and less the mainstay of treatment. We talk about chemotherapy, neoadjuvant chemotherapy, immunotherapy. Can you speak a little bit more about that?
What's happening is that breast cancer management is evolving. And it's evolving from the perspective is that we are now understanding that breast cancer from the outset metastasized in a microscopic way. It means that we don't pick these things up. Cancer cells are floating around and they're looking for an area to grow. When they do grow and we find that, then we call that metastasis or stage 4 breast cancer. So because we're recognizing that microscopically breast cancer spreads, surgery doesn't treat that. And people survive because of the treatment of this micrometastasis. That's what leads to survival. And the treatment of micrometastasis is medical therapy. That medical therapy includes chemotherapy. It includes hormonal therapy. It includes what we call targeted therapy. And also more recently, immunotherapy. And these therapies target the microscopic spread of breast cancer. And this is what leads to patient survival. Surgery takes care of the local aspect of the care, meaning what is in the breast, what is under the arm, that's what surgery does. And that doesn't lead to any significant difference in the patient's overall survival. Their overall survival really depends on the treatment of these micrometastatic spread. And so the treatment has evolved. And what also is happening is that we've come to recognize that all breast cancer is not the same. And so there are several subtypes of breast cancer, and each subtype has its own treatment options. And therefore, this has opened up a significantly wide options for treatment from a systemic perspective for patients with breast cancer. And so really and truly, I would say this, and I'm saying this as a surgeon, if you have breast cancer, you should really be seeing a medical oncologist first. before any surgery gets done, because you because again, breast cancer is not just one disease. It is very, very what we call heterogeneous, and there are so much treatment options available nowadays.
Well, in urology, particularly in treatment of prostate cancer, and even in bladder cancer, the new advances include genetic testing an actual tumor. So that gives us an insight into, for example, if someone has prostate cancer and they're being cured of prostate cancer, we do genetic testing on the actual tumor or on the biopsies if we're not removing the prostate. And that can be put into an algorithm to determine what is the likelihood in 20 years if you're going to get recurrence, and in 30 years if you're going to get recurrence. So those who are in very high risk for recurrence, we can be very diligent in following them. And those who have a very low likelihood of recurrence, then we don't have to be as diligent. Is there anything like that in breast cancer?
It's all about personalized medicine. That's really what's happening now, because each tumor type can be, each tumor subtype can be treated in a certain way. The responses are different for each individual. We even have a test now that'll determine whether or not patients would benefit from chemotherapy, and therefore will get offered other kind of therapies. So breast cancer therapy and a lot of oncology really has evolved into this personalized medicine. And personalized medicine basically determines tries to achieve a goal-directed therapy for that individual. And I tell patients this all the time. What treatment option a friend of yours had is not necessarily what you're going to get, because it becomes individualized now, because the tumor has different subtypes and the way it interacts with your body is in a different way. And then the way you respond to medication is different. And we have all these options that we then tailor for the individual. And this is called personalized medicine. And most tumor types, especially breast, is going down that road. And this is why we say, I've said that, you know, breast cancer management has evolved. It's no longer just you find a lump, we take it out and that's cured. No. There's a whole lot of more testing that's being done. And this testing gives us a whole lot more information and guides therapy.
Well, we're both surgeons and we see a lot of tragedies that can be prevented. Particularly you're dealing with cancers, and even as a urologist myself, some days are rough days where I'm telling 3-4 patients in a single day that they're being diagnosed with cancer. And the more heartbreaking thing is that too many of these persons that we're diagnosing with cancer are at an advanced stage.
Yeah.
But in terms of breast cancer, what do you think the reluctance a woman may have to actually seek treatment? They find a mass, they sit on it for 6 months, they sit it on 9 months. So something that could have been treated very easily, even with breast sparing management, they wait until it's a fungating mass and it's beyond cure, and we're just going to do a toilet mastectomy for osmesis and because of the foul smelling necrotic tissue.
Greg,
I think women should also be aware that there are, but not every mass is a cancer. Yeah. What are some of the benign lesions that women may feel in the breast?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that's really heartbreaking, and I see it all the time. Women who would have found a lump in the breast and they do nothing about it, and they ignore it, or they try to pray it away. I'm not against prayer, and so they hide. I think, and then what happens is that they recognize that this thing is actually growing and they still conceal it. And that's heartbreaking, because there's so much options for treatment nowadays. And the treatment options does not always involve removal of the breast. I think a lot of women sometimes are afraid of mastectomy or getting it removed or surgeries that can be destructive to the breast. It's not. There's so much different options, so many options, and there's hope for women. But not every breast lesion is cancerous, as you said. A lot of women have what we call benign breast disease, like fibrocystic disease of the breast. They have benign lumps, like what we call fibroadenomas. Some women, and these are lesions that don't even lead to cancers. So the best thing, and what I advise most women, first of all, practice breast awareness, and that is breast self-exam. And we encourage every woman after the period is done to examine their breasts every month. And the whole idea is to become aware of what is normal for you. And if you find something abnormal, then bring it to the attention of your medical practitioner. And in doing that, what happens is that if there's something that goes that is awry, then it will be further investigated. Sitting on a lump, it's not going to change. And we have to encourage women, and not only just the women. We got to encourage the men to look after their women also.
Okay, let's take a call.
Okay, go ahead.
Caller, go ahead. Good evening. Okay, that call fell through. All right, yeah, so it is a tragedy to see so many women who could have lived another 40 years. They had the whole life ahead of them, and because of fear, because of misunderstanding, they made a very manageable situation get out of hand and lead to tragedy. And I mean, many of them, unfortunately, have young kids. They have a husband they're leaving behind. They have so much they could have lived for, and it's just because of fear and because of the fear of hospitalization. But in the end, when you have advanced disease, you're going to be in and out of hospital more than just curative treatment. So please do not be fearful. I mean, not every lesion, not every mass is necessarily cancer.
I'll also say, Greg, is that it's never too late. And we should encourage, if you have something wrong, just come. There's always hope, especially now with all the modern therapies that we're seeing. I mean, most tumors are treatable.
Okay, we have another call.
Okay.
Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks. Hello. Good evening.
Hello. Hello.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, Dr. Pinto. I couldn't hear you. Forgot. Yeah.
52, how are you?
I'm you guys soaking up all this knowledge, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, Doc, a doctor-patient's dialogue is always educational, right?
Very
and
much so.
I listen to you guys, and firstly, I mean, I'd like to thank you really for bringing the, highlighting the necessity for an MRI in the public hospitals, right? And I'm sitting listening to you guys as far as intervention. So then another thing would be to discuss affordability, right? Affordability. And so as it relates to the MRI, and it's an intervention, you know, like we talked about early diagnosis. I mean, you're able to detection, right? Let's say for breast, prostate, and I listen to you guys. So maybe one of these weeks you could do one on the prostate. And so maybe we could have a dialogue from a patient's perspective also, because, you know, I was able to voice my opinions about a lot of things. And so there's a lot of suffering in it. So, you know, I like to humanize some of these stories. That's like when the females then make their testimony about their journey, right? But one of the things I realize as an avid reader and as a science dropout, right, is that science is always evolving. And so with the treatment of cancer, it seems to be just a revolving door. And I'm sitting here listening to you guys talking about the innovations, right? And I'm excited because, we know that one time I met a lady in the hospital and she had lung cancer. And she doesn't smoke, but the cancer had metastasized from her breast to her lungs, et cetera, right? Having this conversation. So then I see studies coming up about the lymphatic system. We know that the lymphatic system is a part of the immune system, and most of the cancers metastasize via the lymphatic system. So I see where they're saying they can extract the lymphatic system. I don't know how many. You know, there's lymph nodes, so I guess they wouldn't be practical to take at all. So I'd just like to see what you guys think about that. There are other forms of intervention and things like immunotherapy, et cetera, et cetera. And so, like doctors who study integrative medicine and all these different things and just different perspectives, like, let's say the treatment of cancer. And so the availability and affordability of it seeing that it's so prevalent, you know what I mean? Like the lady explained to me that, you know, when I had mentioned that basically only 6 or 7% of the cancers are caused through genetics, but she was saying given our lifestyle, we are more predisposed and maybe we have a higher rate than the global average. You see what I'm saying? So we're looking at all of these things, but for me, the MRI would be a great step in an intervention and to end catastrophic like diseases or fallout. And so I just thought that was something that we should push for. I heard you mention it. The other doctors, they always talk about the MRI. So but we know how important it is. But then it's not your prerogative or responsibility to have this implemented. It was supposed to be the Minister of Health and to bring knowledge and bring light to these things. You see what I'm saying? And so even when it comes to BPH, Dr. Pinto, and the procedures, you know, I've had the suprapubic also, and I was catheterized also, and then the post-surgery events, and just the invasive procedure, like the TURP. You said there's an innovation to the TURP. They have the vaporization and all these other things that you had discussed with me earlier. And so I know they are less painful and less invasive.
But yes, yes, you're making excellent points.
They shouldn't even be doing it, but yesterday it was calling it the gold standard. These are the type of public, the honest conversations I like to have about many things from a patient's perspective. You see what I'm saying, Doc?
Well, thank you for your wonderful points. Yes, it is a goal of mine, a personal goal of mine, to get an MRI in the public system. I think that's going to happen, and I've been trying through the avenue of a public-private partnership. It's fundamental. Just as a urologist for prostate cancer, you must have MRI in terms of from screening to management to staging. There's no debate. It's part of the paradigm of modern urology, and MRI is so imperative in so many other specialties, whether it's related to cardiology, whether you need it for neurosurgery, neurology, orthopedics. I mean, you're in a car accident, you come in with a cervical spine injury, you need to have imaging in the form of an MRI. You're unstable. You shouldn't be, your spinal injury is unstable. You shouldn't have to be placed in an ambulance and taken to a private MRI facility 2 o'clock in the morning, being moved to try to get that imaging. So yes, it's extremely important. And slowly but surely things are improving. We were able to, I wrote many letters, it took 5 years, but we were able to get improvements in terms of equipment in urology. So slowly but surely things are happening. Immunotherapy is available in the public system. Immunotherapy is an excellent modality that I've seen cases where patients have metastatic disease involving their lungs, their liver, and it's melted away with immunotherapy. But we'll continue this talk, and I thank you for your call on the other end of the break. Thank you.
Try to rest, but roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers. For window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Always on the go? Missed a show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bulla Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good for nothing boy?
Shh. you don't want bullet hair. You say that. You know, she always say that's my good child.
So what are you doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police want to find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows it's you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried the other day and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick around the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto and my co-host, the great surgical oncologist, Bahamian Dr. Wesley Francis. We were talking about immunotherapy. So immunotherapy, I'll let you expound, but basically, it's life-threatening. It's almost a miracle. I've seen cases of bladder cancer where an individual would have had 2 months to live, and now I've seen them having a happy life, cancer-free 5 years later. So essentially, yeah, almost in a similar fashion to dialysis, where we remove the immune-fighting cells from an individual by plasmapheresis. So we basically, in layman's term, program that individual's immune cells to basically target the cancer, whether it's prostate cancer, whether it's breast cancer, and put those fighting immune cells back into an individual. And someone who wouldn't have lived 6 months is now living 6 months, 8 months, a year, 2 years. It's not inexpensive. I'll give credit to the government that it is provided quite often in the hospital setting, but I've seen miracles with immunotherapy, and it's given me hope where a lot of death would have occurred and it's not occurring anymore.
Well, yes, Greg, it's immunotherapy is truly a game changer. And specifically as it relates to breast cancer, triple negative breast cancer has been one of the breast cancers with the worst prognosis, affecting a lot of young women. And, you know, but what we found is it's a very immunogenic tumor. And so immunotherapy has been very significant in helping those people.
Okay, we have another call.
All right.
Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Hello.
Good evening, sir.
Is this Guardian?
Yes, it's Guardian Radio with the Urologist Speaks.
Is this Dr. Pinto?
This is he.
Hello.
This is he. Good evening.
Good evening, sir. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. Thank you.
I've been listening to you for many, many, many times calling in to talk. Host guests on talk shows and so forth and this and that and the next. And I listen to you intently. And the only problem I really had is, I normally, from I was 50 years old, I've been doing my prostate test and all that kind of stuff. Can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead.
And most of the times when I do it, I'm not a diabetic. I'm not a high blood pressure person. But, you know, the doctor, Robert, you get to the point where you reach a certain age, you say you have an enlarged prostate, but there's no cancer.
Correct. So it's an inevitable part of being older.
Test with Dr. Roberts and so forth. Check your bladder, go in there and all that kind of stuff. Now, you always profess this stuff, that you could rebuild a man and get him back to 18 years older. But the problem is, when I call the lady to have an appointment with you, the lady tells me, just to get to see you, I got to pay some $800 to $900.
I've, I know that individual didn't work for me. I wish that was the case, but no, it's not even a fraction of that. In fact, particularly even during COVID, I was seeing dozens and dozens of public patients when the urology clinic was closed at PMH for free, often staying in the office until 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. So that's absolutely not the case. In fact, we are limited in what we charge, and even if somebody is indigent and can't afford anything, I often don't charge them anything. So absolutely falsehood. But in terms of, yes, if you do have blessed with advanced age, you will have some element of an obstructive symptoms or irritative symptoms where you're going to be peeing frequently or urgently, or you're not emptying your bladder, or there's going to be...
Can you hear me clearly?
I can hear you. But
yeah, but your voice coming back at me. Right now, I'm at the roundabout by the University of the Bahamas, and you coming back at me right by Guardian.
Okay,
very,
all right.
You sound very far in the background.
All right, but sir.
See,
all right.
The problem is, I'm saying is, I called your private office.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying, but the public office, most of us are scared to even go to that hospital.
I understand. Well, we're trying to make it better. We're trying to make it better. But no, there's no physician, surgeon, or anyone who's going to charge that sort of money for a consultation. So that is completely incorrect. So please even come and see me in my public, in my private office. I will see you for free. But yes, if you do have advanced age, you're going to have urinary symptoms. My mantra is always, yes, you can rise again, no matter what the circumstance. We have first line, second line, third line, fourth line treatment that no matter what, even if you have no nerve supply, no blood supply, low testosterone, we can get you to rise again. But the take-home message is that you'll always have to treat the root cause of erectile dysfunction. And in many cases, that could be coronary artery disease, where if we don't change the path that you're on, 15 years, 18 years down the road, you're likely going to get a heart attack or a stroke. So getting treated for erectile dysfunction, particularly in middle age, can actually save your life. So when we talk about tragedies, you and I, Dr. Francis, see them all the time. But as a urologist, it's heartbreaking to see over 100 men, many in the prime of their life or their golden years, with so much to live for, dying needlessly of prostate cancer, which is not an easy death. It's usually a prolonged death. It might go on 2 years, 5 years, 8 years. It's an expensive death. You're in and out of hospital. You become a burden to your family all of a sudden, physically, emotionally, financially. And prostate cancer is the easiest cancer to treat. Also, over 100 men are being diagnosed with advanced prostate cancer. That's not even for cure. So we're trying to turn the trend. We're trying to make sure that men are being picked up early, where the chance of cure is nearly 100%. We have another call coming in. Good evening.
Yes, good evening, Doc. How you doing?
I'm fantastic. Thank you.
Okay, first I'd like to know, where's your office?
Well, I'm not here to promote myself. If you want to go on Google, you can find me. You know my name. But I don't really like to promote that. So I'm trying to promote good health, not myself. I'm here on a voluntary basis.
At this age, I'm one of those that are not computer literate.
Okay.
So you have to always remember us.
All right, I understand. All right, because it's you and because of your circumstance, my main office is at Oak Tree Medical Center. I'm also at Family Medicine Center on Blake Road.
Oak Seal Medical Center.
Oak Tree Medical Center. I'm sure you've heard of Oak Tree. The main office is where I'm located, is at 5th Terrace and Mount Royal Avenue, which is the base of Hawkins Hill.
Okay.
All right, take care.
I've been checking myself regularly, but I don't have any symptoms.
Well, that's the issue with prostate cancer. You don't have any symptoms early on. And even when you have enlargement of your prostate, a lot of times what will happen is it's a slow progressive change where you have an enlargement of your prostate. It's preventing you from emptying your bladder completely. Your bladder is going to physiologically adapt to that by becoming larger capacity to hold urine for longer periods of time. So you might be peeing almost like you did 5 years ago. It doesn't necessarily mean you're emptying your bladder.
But see, the thing, my problem is I drink a lot of liquid in the night when I'm going to bed because I always want to get that dry taste out of my mouth.
I understand.
And that causes me to go to the bathroom.
Well, very much too. Behavioral modification is also important. We have to look at what you're drinking, the quantity. Is there too much caffeine? Is there too much in the way of alcohol? alcohol is a diuretic, but sounds like you have a lot on your mind, and I'll be very happy to see you in my office for free. I'll remember this voice till the day I die. So I'll see you in my office.
Okay.
Do well. All right, so we're talking about tragedies we're trying to avoid. We're talking about breast cancer, the second most prevalent cancer in terms of incidence for women in this country is cervical cancer. The greatest tragedy of all, I must say. We always talk about there's so much fanfare, there's so much media attention, there's so many organizations highlighting breast cancer, which is extremely important, and I applaud that. There's not enough done in regards to prostate cancer. Men are usually second thought. I'm trying to change that trend. But women are dying needlessly of cervical cancer, and it is a horrific, horrible death. And I'll get into the details because as a urologist, almost every woman with advanced stage 3, stage 4 cancer is going to be seen by a urologist because inevitably, because of obstruction of the cancer spreading through the pelvis, it's going to cause invasion into the bladder. It's going to cause obstruction of your kidneys. You're going to develop kidney failure. We literally have to put tubes into your kidneys to drain the urine and toxins out. They're called nephrostomy tubes, which degrades the quality of life considerably. And there are always going to be complications with the nephrostomy, whether it's going to become infected, whether it's going to be formation of stones or it's going to fall out. But women should not be getting cervical cancer in modern world because we have a vaccine that limits the incidence of cervical cancer, almost eradicates it to the point where 92% of cervical cancers can be prevented by the HPV vaccine, which ideally should be given to boys and girls. Boys are actually more of a reservoir for HPV and giving it to their loved ones or their partner later in life. And the consequences for men is they can actually get cancers, whether it's head and neck cancer, esophageal cancer, penile cancer as well. And yes, you can get penile cancer. So if you want to have a motivation for your son or your nephew or your grandson to get HPV vaccine at 11 to 12 is ideal, even before 14 is ideal. You can get penile cancer. You can get vaginal cancer. You can get cervical cancer. What happens when you get cervical cancer? You usually die of renal failure. You waste away losing 50, 60 pounds. Many of these women are 25, 28, 32. Young kids see them dying. And the death is horrific because you have a vaginal discharge from the necrotic tissue. Usually the cervical cancer is invaded into the vagina where you develop fistula. Abnormal communication between the vagina itself and the rectum or the colon, where essentially you're having feces and stool coming out of your vagina. The indignity of that all, the degradation of your life, and you have your children surrounding you, you have your husband, that many of them are newlyweds or haven't been married more than 5 years. To see your wife, your loved one, your mother go through that is not something you'll ever forget. And why does that have to happen when you have an HPV vaccine? If we had a vaccine that stopped breast cancer from occurring in 92% of the cases, we would be giving it to everybody, and everyone would know that. If we had a vaccine that stopped prostate cancer in 92% of the cases, everybody would be running to get that vaccine. But why are we letting, even in the public system, I would say 30 to 40 cases of advanced cervical cancers occurring in women of all ages? I've seen women even as young as 23 dying of cervical cancers.
Just a note, Greg, it's free.
Exactly.
It's free.
Yeah. Readily available, easily accessible, and absolutely free. And even the odor, and this is something that I'll take on a personal note. When these women are on the female surgical ward at PMH or on the gynecological ward on PMH, the foul smell, and it's almost the ulcerating cervical tumor is almost, you can describe as rotting meat. It's such a putrid smell. You can just go into the ward or even down the corridor and you can know there's somebody in one of these wards who has cervical cancer, where women in nearby beds are literally gasping and vomiting from the smell. It is horrendous. And to see a woman live like that and die like that unnecessarily is something that we as a nation need to stop by promoting the HPV vaccine, no matter what way we can do it, and stopping men developing HPV-related cancers or carrying HPV. HPV, in many cases, is dissipated. It's eradicated by our own immune system, and a lot of people don't even know they had HPV. It's the most common sexually transmitted illness disease, but it can cause, and those select individuals, and there are over 200 variants of HPV, it can be a killer. And let's stop that happening. I know you see the tragedies as well related to cervical cancer.
I think we should emphasize prevention. There are certain cancers that can be totally prevented. You know, as we said before, you can't prevent breast cancer. You want to early detect it. Cervical cancer is something that you can prevent. Colon cancer is something that you can prevent. And just a matter of correction, you know, colon cancer is the number two cancer in women, and then cervical to follow. But both of them are totally preventable. And as you said, vaccine, I mean, it's provided by the government free of cost to school-age children. And it's just a matter of accepting it. And it prevents all of the what you said before. We have a call?
No. So you mentioned colon cancer. We have a call. Let's just take that call. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
I can hear me.
I can.
So you mentioned the HPV virus being the cause of penile cancer.
It's one of the precursors, and yes, it can lead to penile cancer, yes.
How often do you see that?
Well, it depends on where you, for example, when I trained in Cape Town, South Africa, we used to see it every single week. But here, unfortunately, when we do see it, I probably see about 5-6 a year. It's reached the point where the men are so embarrassed by it. The only reason they come into the emergency room is because the fungating mass has basically obstructed their urethra, their pee pipe, and they can't pee, and they're in urinary retention with their bladder about to burst. So you basically have men coming in where the penile cancer has reached a point where it's led to almost a gangrenous self-amputation or partial amputation of the penis itself. So even if it's 5 cases or 6 cases, and I'm not the only one who sees them, let's say 10 cases, that's 10 cases too many. But the take-home message is no one should be getting penile cancer. No one should be getting cervical cancer. Sexually transmitted diseases can be prevented if we use a condom.
Are there differences in infection rates of HPV in men, depending on whether you are circumcised or not?
There have been a lot of double-blind studies and a lot of research in regards to that. There, in, for example, I'll extrapolate to HPV, to HIV, which is also a virus. So it's been found conclusively in certain countries where there's a very high incidence of HIV that if we do nationwide promoted circumcisions, it's shown to significantly reduce the HIV transmission by as much as 60%. In our society where we do have HIV and it is a problem, advocating circumcision for everyone really is not going to be the answer to lowering HIV rates, although it can be help. It can help lower the rates. But in countries where there's an overwhelming amount of HIV, you can, yes. So when we look at the inner foreskin, there are actually receptors in the inner foreskin which are perfect conduits for virus transmission, whether it's HIV, whether it's HPV. So yes. And we talk about hygiene and everything. So, yes, getting a circumcision can somewhat reduce your HPV risk. But the most important thing, let's get our preteens, teenagers, even we can advocate up to the age of 26, getting the HPV vaccine for men, women, young boys, young girls throughout the country. And we're going to see a turnaround in terms of reducing the number of cases where even cases where it might be not very common, but no one wants to see someone who has esophageal cancer related to HPV, which also usually presents very late. Okay, so you talked about colonoscopies reducing the chance of colon cancer. I've read, and I know from my days of general surgery, as many as 69% of premalignant polyps, if they're removed, can reduce it. What is the percentage?
Well, 100%, basically. I mean, if you remove a polyp, because polyps go on to develop into cancer. And so if you remove polyp, you totally prevent colon cancer.
Okay.
And so we can take it up on the next side of the break.
On the other side of the break, we'll continue this talk.
And impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located at the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Okay, so as the jingle will say, we're trying to do early prevention, preventing these tragedies from occurring where too many of our residents in this beautiful Bahamas are being diagnosed with advanced cancers that some of them are preventable, but some of them are inevitable. But if we can pick it up early, your chance to cure for every cancer is excellent. And we need to turn the tide. So when we talk about colonoscopies, What is the role of a colonoscopy? When do we get colonoscopy? It's both diagnostic and therapeutic. Can you explain a little bit more, Dr.
Francis? So colon screening, there are multiple ways to do that. But colonoscopy, whether it's a virtual colonoscopy where you actually do, that's radiological, where you'd use a CT scan.
What's the sensitivity and specificity of that?
It's high. I mean, I can't give you the exact figure, right?
But it's comparable.
But it is comparable. The issue between virtual colonoscopy and optical colonoscopy, because if the virtual colonoscopy is positive, then you have to get the optical colonoscopy, right? So virtual colonoscopy, as you rightly said, is only diagnostic. It's not therapeutic. Optical colonoscopy, that would be therapeutic because not only are you able to see the polyp, but you're able to actually remove the polyp. And it's in the removing of the polyp is what leads to prevention of cancer. Because there's a term that we call an adenoma or carcinoma sequence. It takes up to about 10 years. And these polyps are benign. And over the course of years, they then become malignant. So if you remove them before they become malignant, you totally prevent colon cancer. And that's why we recommend, especially in people of African descent, at age 45 is when you should get your first colon screening, or whether that's virtual or optical. A lot of people would prefer virtual, but optical is, I mean, you know, people fear sometimes having to go through the process. But I'll tell you, the worst part of it all is just the prep. And the prep for the colonoscopy, virtual and the optical, is basically the same. And so, and when you do get the optical colonoscopy, you don't even remember. I had one. And I don't remember anything. The only thing you know is that you take the prep the night before, and then you go, and then you wake up, and that's it. You don't ever remember what actually happened. And it's the one single thing that will save your life, because we see so many people who present then with colon cancers that can be totally prevented. And if we catch you, and usually, oftentimes, we detect this at a late stage, and then late stage colon cancers are so difficult to treat and require so much resources. So an ounce of prevention here is what would save lives when it comes to colon cancer.
What is a FIT test, and what's the reliability of FIT tests, and are there a lot of false positives, false negatives?
Well, a FIT test is basically a stool-based test, right, that detects blood. The whole idea is that if you have a polyp or you have colon cancer, a polyp really, that sheds bloods, that blood can be picked up with this test. This stool-based test then basically will let you know that, listen, there is something wrong, and now you need to go further on to get further testing. And so so we can use that, especially in low resource areas, as an initial screen. And then if that's positive, then you go on to get an optical colonoscopy. And again, age 45 is when people will start. You get that. If it's positive, go on to get a colonoscopy. And then that basically reduces the chances of everybody getting a colonoscopy. At least that's what is proposed. But still, we do recommend that patients should get either virtual or optical colonoscopies.
But must there be blood present in your stool or rectum for you to have cancer? Can you have no blood and still have cancer?
Oh, yeah, because sometimes these things, and that's the thing, they're false negative. Right,
and there are of course benign conditions that can lead to blood. A lot of individuals, men and women, will see blood in their stool intermittently, and they think automatic cancer, and they put it in the back shelf, and they don't want to address it. What are some of the benign conditions?
Let me tell you this. I would say if you ever see blood in your stool, get it checked out, because I've seen so many people who actually attribute blood in the stool to hemorrhoids.
Yes.
And I would say that's the biggest thing out there. Hemorrhoids do cause bleeding, and you would see blood in your stool, and it usually coats the stool, or you see the streaks of blood around it. And so much people would just say, okay, I have hemorrhoids, I have bleeding, and then don't get it checked out. That leads to disaster. So if you see blood in your stool, get checked out, especially if you're middle age, 45 and above, blood and stool, hands down, go get it checked out. Do not attribute this. Even younger patients do not attribute this to hemorrhoids. I have personally seen patients who were young, and they had some, again, genetic mutations that can lead to early onset colon cancers, and they were having blood in their stool, and it was thought that it was because of hemorrhoid, and it then led to disaster. So any blood in the stool, I would recommend that people get checked out.
Well, we're here to present preventative medicine. We're trying to be proactive. We're trying to prevent disasters from happening. What are some of the risk factors for colon cancers, and what are some of the modifiable risk factors for colon and rectal cancer? Diet, et cetera, exercise?
So certainly everything is diet. Most people would say if you have a diet rich in meat, red meat, that can lead to colon cancers. People who have more plant-based diets tend to, well, it's believed to be less, or less of this Western diet versus a diet that is more Mediterranean. So our diet then can lead to this often. And this is why we encourage patients to have a lot more fiber in their diet, and which will really lead to better colon health. And these are the things that we encourage. Exercise, rich in fiber, greens, less red meat. I'm not saying eliminate red meat, but at least have a higher fiber diet, and that would lead to more better colon health than continuous eating red meat all the time.
Yeah, so diet is very important. We want to eat a well-balanced diet. We want to limit our processed food intake, our red meat intake. Yeah. We make sure that we have exercise 3 times a week. Always do it in groups so you can encourage one another. Do things that you love to do. If you don't want to go to the gym, you're not going to stick with going to the gym. If you like to swim, then swim. Swim is a wonderful form of exercise. We have beautiful waters that we need to enjoy.
It's just movement, you know. Movement is important.
Any movement. Yeah. For example, yeah. You mentioned the study looking at even doing housework. So you need to stop this sedentary lifestyle.
Yes.
You need to try to get up and out and mentally keep yourself sharp by stimulating yourself mentally as well. You need to have avenues for stress relief. We all have stress in life. We need to. Exercise is a wonderful way to relieve stress as well. But diet is very important for all cancers.
And reducing alcohol intake.
Very much so.
That's important there.
We unfortunately, I'll go again to prostate cancer because I'm trying to stop 100 men dying needlessly every year from prostate cancer. Studies have shown, particularly in middle age, if you have a very high alcohol intake, you can have a more aggressive form of prostate cancer. If you have obesity or if you're overweight, you're going to have a more aggressive form of prostate cancer and other cancers. And even across the board, any oncologist will tell you, those who are going to fare well, who are going to survive the cancer, are those who have a normal body mass index. Those who are overweight are not going to do as well. Even the treatment modalities, whether it's radiation or chemotherapy or even surgery, they're not going to fare as well if you're overweight. So do your part. Make sure that your body mass index is on the normal range, that you avoid the fatty foods, the processed food. If you are a male in this country where we have exceedingly high risk for prostate cancer, limit your dairy milk intake because prostate cancer is very hormonal sensitive and the estrogens in dairy milk can promote the formation of prostate cancer. We talked about it a little bit last week, and I'll let you expound in terms of postmenopausal men, women, and breast cancer in terms of being overweight, where the estrogens are produced by the adipose tissues. Can you speak a little bit on that?
Again, as we mentioned, in postmenopausal women, estrogen is produced by the enzyme aromatase, which converts basically fat cells into estrogen. And so that becomes a significant risk factor for postmenopausal women. So the more overweight, the more fat environment that you have, then that can lead through this enzyme aromatase to elevated levels of estrogen, which then increase your risk of breast cancer. And if you do have breast cancer, even make it worse. We actually treat patients, postmenopausal women who are hormonally, who have hormonal-based breast cancer with anti-estrogen, which is an aromatase inhibitor. So that becomes a significant risk factor in the postmenopausal. In premenopausal women, not as much, even though, yes, being overweight is a significant risk factor. But most of the estrogen is produced by the ovary in premenopausal women, whereas it's in fat cells in postmenopausal women, so it's significant.
And we talk about estrogen, the role of hormones in cancer, and then we'll highlight it in breast cancer. What does tamoxifen do in terms of women who, quote-unquote, are in remission for breast cancer?
So tamoxifen reduces your risk of a recurrence in breast cancer, and that's its primary.
But not all forms of breast
cancer.
Not
all. Yes. And remember, we had mentioned earlier in the program, we talk about subtypes. There are breast cancers that are hormone sensitive, and then there are those that are not. So patients who have hormone sensitive breast cancer, tamoxifen acts as an estrogen blocker, and it reduces your risk of recurrence. And estrogen also can be used as a preventive tool with high-risk women. For example, women with BRCA who are known to be BRCA positive, tamoxifen is a form of medical therapy to reduce their risk. It's a risk reduction drug for them to develop breast cancer.
Okay, so we're going to wrap things up. We're here completely on a voluntary basis. I thank you very much for being here, Dr. Francis. A surgeon's life is never ending. There's always something going on. And to come here at the end of a long day, I greatly appreciate that. But we're here as Bahamian men trying to inspire. We spoke about it in the past, young men in particular, to please believe in themselves, to make academics an important part of their life from the earliest age possible. I've actually met a 15-year-old who lives in your old neighborhood who said he was inspired to hear you achieve what you achieve.
That's so excellent.
You're not, your circumstances do not define you. You can always overcome. And you, it's always wonderful to see someone who has overcome as a source of inspiration and a guiding light. And I hope that you and I can both inspire young men to, it's important to play basketball and get exercise and play with the boys and play dominoes, but please pick up the books. When you make that sacrifice in academics earlier in life, it makes your life better.
Education can be life-changing.
Very much so. Yeah, we've both seen the world. Yeah. We both have had opportunities that we never thought we would have, and that our children are going to have a better life and more opportunities that we ever had.
Absolutely.
And we hope the next generation will continue, and that can only happen with academics. So thank you very much, Dr. Wesley Francis, surgeon oncologist, I'm Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto. This is The Urologist Speaks. Have a good night, Bahamas.
Urologist, you will find he'll help you solve your problems on 96.